Like, hey kids, I got candy.
All I have is this creepy, since there's no light in this room, all I have is this creepy overhead light.
Yeah, pal.
It's like,
stop it. Like, can we change this? Have you learned nothing from me after all these years of being a production podcasting god?
I also have a, I also have right here near the light, a phone book to beat people with. Have you ever seen the movie Thief with Jamie Caan?
Yes, yes, I have.
I've been on a Michael Mann kick lately. A man quest, if you will.
A man quest. It's a good quest.
I saw Heat for the first time after like 30 years of people being like, it's great. I'm putting on my therapy light. If that.
I'm glad. I'm glad. I'm glad. Thank you.
And then I watched Thief. And
I think Thief is better than Heat.
Hot takes in the first minute. Emilio's here. Emilio, there's so much to say. Emilio, you, the last episode you were on was episode 163.
How many episodes are you up to now?
This, I think, is 350.
Thanks for the invite. Thanks. Appreciate it.
First of all, everyone else texts me, hey, Mike, here's an idea. Hey, why don't we do an episode on this? Sure. Everyone pitches me shit. No, Emilio, you need a red carpet. I need to send an engraved fucking thing. Emilio, will you please grace PCMC?
I would like a carrier pigeon of some sort of Harry Potter, like winged species coming in and dropping the envelope into my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be like, hey, do you want to come on the pod? You know, I just helped you start the thing. You know, I'm just
a great job.
I'm a PCMC OG.
You
that's
are.
That's a lot of syllables right there.
But every time I text you, I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, I'm in a Learjet with fucking Mr. T over LA right now. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's I know. My life like got that. Really, my life's really, gotten really crazy. Yeah.
You've gone real big time.
Yeah.
Maybe I was what was holding you back. Have you ever thought about that?
No, I look back on PCMC with a fondness because it was just a simpler time because all I had to do was just show up. That's all I had to do was just show up, talk about some pop culture shit and keep moving.
Yeah.
But
now
yeah,
you make
I know.
Good money, right? You fucking, you put bread on the table because of podcasting.
My life is dope and I do dope shit, pal.
Emilio Sparks, welcome back.
Thank you.
Episode 350.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I do have to say, now that I'm here and I'm looking at all of this, congratulations, by the way. You know, you've really kept it just to an audio-based medium where now, like, with no other promotion other than a couple of things on Pic Collage, you know, so, like, the marketing aspect of it. But
the marketing...
Can we step it up a little bit, though? Can we start to do... I think a video aspect of PCMC would be absolutely fantastic. Do you know how likable you are?
I feel like I don't have a face for it.
Bull. I call Pox. Pox, I call. You're good
looking.
You're good looking. You have a nice distinguishable gray in your beard. You don't have a wrinkle on your face, my friend.
Well, because like, it's round. That's why.
Not,
but you know what it is? I think you could relate to this. I like editing, right? I like crafting the son of a bitch. And the thing about the like doing the videos is it makes it 100 times harder to edit. Like, you know, like if I could put one sentence together with another in the magic of audio, it's perfect. But like, if you and me are talking and then like you go on some crazy rant that I need to cut out, I've got to like cut to a picture of something and do a Ken Burns slow zoom.
Yeah, you got to do
and
that.
And then like use that to mask cutting away. It's too much. And some people don't edit at all. And I mean, YouTube is full of that shit.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. You're talking to somebody that has a big OCD and control issues when it comes to his client's work. And because it's an embodiment of my work, it's literally now my resume. It's my digital portfolio to show people, hey, this is what we can do. So I get it. But you have to, one, I think, trust your hosts, right? In my case, I have to trust my clients. And two, you have to trust the subject matter. And for me now, I get very, very anal about certain things. Like even if a breath is off, I will spend at least 15 minutes thinking, should I keep the breath? Should I not keep the breath? No, let me hear it out. Let me hear it in. Let me hear it out. Let me hear it in. Let me hear it. Like, so I will go back and forth for 15 minutes to the point where I'm going to rip my hair out of my head. You know,
I've got it way down.
Yeah.
I used to spend hours editing. I mean, hours.
Right.
And now I can kind of play it through. I could do a few things in the beginning, like truncate silence, you know, play with the levels a little bit.
Yeah.
And then go all the way through and then really just cut out any bullshit. I'll leave ums in.
Oh, no, I hate all of that stuff.
Well, I feel like if you cut too much out, it feels like breathless. Like it feels like fake in a way.
I got the ultimate compliment though in regards to my editing from a pretty big radio name, and they were talking about just, you know, who's a good editor, and I was walking by and they go, "You see that
was
guy
it
right
there?" Newman?
Yes, it was.
I was like,
"You see that guy right there? That guy makes it sound effortless. Well, he could, like you said, take a piece from the end, put it in the middle, and you wouldn't even know." He goes, "There are a lot of you here that should be fucking ashamed of yourselves how you edit audio." And then I crossed over and went to video. And that's what I've been predominantly doing now. I've been doing predominantly video work now as well.
You know, I've been seeing college courses in podcasting. You want to be a podcast professor?
I do.
Those gigs are out there now.
I would
those
love
gigs
to.
Are out there now.
I would love to wear one of those tweed jackets with leather patches and
absolutely,
you know, walk around smelling like tobacco and some patchouli. Sort of musk. Patchouli, and you know, walk around with a douchey scarf around my neck talking about the good old days when Marconi was doing this. You know, I would love to actually be a professor. I thought about it like legitimately because I've really done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And this is not just to brag or whatever, but like I've done it in every way you can possibly imagine a podcast. So it's to me, it's let's go. I mean, I've done work for Vice, DJ Khaled, LeBron James, WWE, and a slew of other people. But like now it's just a matter of I want to do it all. And like, video was the next step. And I was so hesitant for a while to do it because of the factors that you named.
You're right.
The ease and the control. And I don't know if I really trust my guests. And, you know, everything's so geopolitical nowadays. Or you have to go through an edit with a fine tooth comb because, you know, just everybody's a critic and nobody could just be a fan no more. And everybody's so argumentative and confrontational on social media. So I get it, you know, but after a while that would become so just like, sterile. And I was like, okay, I'm going to just try something a bit different. And I'm going to start doing video editing.
You know what the other thing is for me? And I've said this before on the show, I think of, to me, podcasting is like the nerds that hang out in the library. In the high school of media, right? Of social media, podcasters are like the nerds that hang out in the library in a nice little safe space where YouTube is the mean girls at the fucking popular table.
Yes.
Like if three people listen to my show, nobody knows that. But on YouTube, those numbers are boom right there. Everyone could see how little engagement you have. And it's rough.
It is rough because I recently started my own YouTube channel just as a hobby. I'm not trying to really do anything with it.
Plus, it's harder on here for copyright shit. Like you can hum a song too long and they'll fucking pull your shit.
Oh yeah.
It's relentless.
There's just ways around certain things, though. Like I like to do original content and I have a slew of friends. As you know, I also dabbled in music production. We make our own music for the stuff.
Yes.
You know? But I started doing more mindfulness and influencer type stuff, stuff that really just spoke to me and filled my cup. Not to do it because of any trends or whatever. But like case in point, I started a YouTube channel and the three YouTube videos that I have up, two videos I'm doing yoga with professional wrestlers, and then another video I'm learning Brazilian jiu-jitsu from a professional wrestler. So,
and this is a video.
Yeah, you can just see them. They're out there, man. They're
is it like a remote bit like Letterman or Conan would do? Like here's Emilio learning in a class, and then you're jerking around
in a way.
Or you're taking it super serious
in a way. The sometimes like the openings are a little like Conan-ish for sure. But when it gets down to the brass tacks of like doing yoga, since I am a 200-hour yoga teacher trainer, I'm taking the craft seriously because I'm bringing somebody into the world that has never done it before or maybe done it once or twice. Like case in point, my buddy Big E, WWE superstar, we talked about doing yoga for years, and it just so happens that our schedules finally aligned the right way. And I was in the throes of my yoga teacher training. And I was like, you know what? I want to start doing this more because it speaks to me. And I really enjoy the content creation in regards to the mental wellness space when it's not just egregiously thrown in your face.
Right, right.
You know, and we're talking about some real things, imposter syndrome and, you know, not really feeling validated or good enough.
I think that should be your new grift. I think you should be. And yeah. Then from that into mommy blogging.
I would love to be a mommy blogger. I would love that. I would love that. You know, just randomly take like my cousin's kid and just be like, hey, I'm going to borrow him for like 25 minutes, a couple of times a week. Don't worry about them. There's just a full camera crew. There's a makeup artist. No, we're going to go shopping. We're going to go food shopping. I'm going to go a Target run, the whole nine. I'm going to talk about, you know, formula as opposed to breastfeeding, whatever we need.
Whatever
I got you. Whatever the hot topics in mommy blogging is, I should do that.
All right. We've already fucked around a lot and I haven't even introduced your show. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Emilio Sparks. Emilio, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back after episode 150.
Yes. It's been a while. Your last episode was about collecting wrestling t-shirts. Are you still doing that?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
how's the collection looking now?
They are just getting more and more obscure and more expensive every time.
What do you get on, like eBay?
No. I got a dealer I go through. Big shout outs to Ted from Wrestling For Sale. Okay. I go through somebody exclusively. When I was in California, I spent a bag, boy, let me tell you.
What about, and how are you with the Motu? Are you still?
I have to stop. I know, I got so mad at it, I had to stop. I'm looking to give away my Motu. Like, if we did this in person, you would have left with boxes of Motu today.
Well, what happened? Why are you giving away?
It's just, I wanted to be a completist with this collection.
Yes.
And then they just started to not keep it to the source material. And then they wanted to do Motu and the Snake Men and all this other jazz.
What were you getting? You were getting originals or you were getting?
Oh, no, I have the original. The ones that I wanted with the 12 back card. I got those. I got the original 12 that I wanted. Big shout outs to Attorney of Dreams. I got my original 12, like, and they're in really good condition.
Yeah.
Like, they're like really mint. Even you can stand them up. They have good. They're very toyetic. You can move them around like the parts still work. But in regards to like the origin stuff, I went really insane and started to buy because it was so cheap.
The origin stuff. But yeah, I also fell off at Origins because they started producing faster than I could buy. And they had secret waves. They'd be like five new ones that I didn't even know about. And I'm like, where the fuck is it? Like, what is this shit?
And Mattel pissed me off because I went through Mattel collectibles and I gave me two Grizzlors. Uh-huh. And I was so irate over that I kept on emailing and they weren't getting back to me. And then customer service finally got back to me and apologized and said, no, we're sorry. We're out of $1. So I was like, what's that mean for me? Like, I'm just going to keep the two Grizzlors then. Thank you for nothing. So that's when I stopped. I stopped after that.
Because personal beef with Mattel.
Oh, personal, huge personal beef with them now.
Well, now they had the Barbie movie last year. They're fucking high on the horse. They don't give a shit about you.
No, they don't care about me.
They're back with
you.
Barbie. That's the nut.
That's it. They're good now. You know what I mean? Like, Margot Robbie's texting them. They're hanging out. They're having like a little coffee clutch when they're talking about, you know, everything. Yeah. They're like, don't give Emilio his $1. Just let him have two Grizzlors.
They rehabilitated that federal felon, Ruth Handler, in that movie and made her look like an angel. Did you see that movie?
I sat through it for a bit and I was like, okay, Greta, great director. I like the pacing of it, but I can't just get through a doll having an existential crisis about their like mortality or lack thereof. And what does it mean? What is life? No, like, your job in that movie is to be played with and adored by millions of children
it's
around
the
world.
It's about her journey to get a vagina. She has none.
Fine. Then make that the actual thing and say that. Be like, hey, I want a vagina.
All
like
right. I'm going to isolate that. All right, listen. Let's hone in on today's topic. Today's topic, which you suggested, which is a good one. Let's talk about X-Men 97. X-Men 97 is a 10-episode animated series. If you don't know, the X-Men animated series from the 90s, right? I don't know what year
1992.
96?
92 to 96, yes.
It's got
to
be 96. Yeah. And I didn't watch that religiously. I watched handfuls of episodes. I seem to remember the Phoenix Saga a lot. And then this show comes around. Well, look, you had a couple years ago, Disney buys Fox. So now Marvel has everything back. And they've been doing something I think that's really smart, which is like when they got Spider-Man back, they were like, let's just start again. Let's just reboot Spider-Man. But they knew, okay, X-Men already has like good stuff. Like we've already, so they do the animated series, right? Taking basically like a sequel. It's basically like if the animated series ended, this is like the next episode. Yes. And then you've got Deadpool and Wolverine bringing yes. back, you know, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. These are some of the smartest things Marvel's done in a while.
Right. And I wonder if Wolverine's going to have an existential crisis about not having a vagina as well.
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I think so. I think so.
What did, let me ask you, what's did you watch the original?
Oh yeah.
X-Men?
Yeah. And then I went back and watched it for the sanctity for the sanctity of this conversation to make sure I actually knew what I was talking about.
All right. So amazing. So then because I really liked this series, and this is, look, it's a streaming series, right? So there's 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Compared to originally what they stripped them, meaning they were five a week.
Five a week,
so,
yeah.
Yeah,
five
so there was probably a lot. This series, this season fits a lot of story into 10 episodes, and it's like breakneck speed. It looks the same. It's got the same animation style, and it really does look like the original show, but you've got blood, red blood.
Oh, yeah, it's the whole thing. You didn't get that in the first five seasons, which was 76 episodes in total. It started October 31st, 1992, when it ran till September 20th, I want to say, 1997.
Interesting.
And like how many there was 13 episodes in season one, 13 in season wow. two, 19 in season three, 21 in season four. And then 10 in season five, because I think they were legitimately going to cap it at season four. And then if you also yeah. notice, there's a really janky animation shift, too, where the production value in the
animation, in the original series.
Yeah, it goes way down.
Really?
Way down. Oh, yeah.
See, that's surprising to me. I didn't realize that it had such short seasons. That's pretty amazing then, actually. Well,
because you're doing the first run goes from October to March, right? Then season two comes around again, you know, fall, the kids, it was on Fox Kids, you know, so then it was October to February. And then they did a summer run from July to October. Then the fourth season goes from May to October.
So it's just kind of like it's going on its own kind of schedule. Like it's just,
yeah.
Yeah. And some of the voices came back for this. Well, some of the people dead. Yes.
Yeah, some of them were dead. You know, after three decades of waiting to do a follow up, a lot of them were old. They were going to go.
Let's go through the episodes because I was really impressed. I really liked it. I kind of went into it. And I do like the X-Men, but I'm more of a casual X-Men
right.
fan. Well,
did you watch the last episode from the original series?
No, I
understand?
Didn't.
Okay.
And that's where Charles dies, supposedly?
Well, yeah. So in the final episode of the original animated series, it was entitled Graduation Day. And you had Henry Peter Gyrick, who was the most outspoken human enemy of the X-Men in the original series, right? In the final episode, Gyrick uses a device against Charles Xavier, who's in the middle of a speech at the United Nations, and the device overloads Xavier's telepathic powers, and it kind of like shorted his brain, and he went into like a coma.
Okay.
Kind of. and the authorities apprehended Gyrick. He's doing jail time. But the damage was already done. Tensions between humans and mutants were arising. We were preparing for war. Xavier falls into a coma, like I said. And they said not only that, but the psychic damage done begins to slowly start to kill Charles Xavier. And there was nobody on Earth that could save him.
So did they get canceled? I mean, because...
Yeah, it ended on a cliffhanger. Yeah, right. That's how the series ended. Yeah, they canceled the series.
God, that's got to suck.
I mean, I think
for a kid, that's got to be horrible.
Yeah, man. But I also think it was just changing too, like the landscape of cartoons and what they were doing. And
then you had the movies too.
Yeah, superheroes as well. It just wasn't really a bread and butter unless you were a Power Ranger or even look what they were doing afterwards, like Eat the Cat and other it's cartoons pretty, like that.
A lot of it's interesting that it was in its own kind of time. And, you know, look, watching this now, it made me think about Marvel. And it makes me really wonder, like, it is kind of amazing that we had this big Marvel Cinematic Universe without this gigantic part of it.
Huge part.
I mean, a huge part of it. Like, it's crazy. And you would have, like, ancillary things like Quicksilver. But, like, don't say who Quicksilver's dad is.
That
like,
is, yeah.
Don't say the word mutant.
Well, you couldn't because they were all owned by Sony. They were properties of Sony. So how easily you can work around that is, oh, we got all these other characters. Nobody cared about Iron Man at first. Let's try Iron Man. The Guardians of the Galaxy. Sure, we'll use them. We own that intellectual property. Then those blow up and they become this big thing. Fox isn't equipped to have the bandwidth or the wherewithal to really do what they wanted to do. And they started to like just lose billions of dollars. So Disney just came in and swooped in and bought it all. And they
Fox didn't do terrible, though.
I mean, when they first started.
I think Deadpool 1 is incredible.
That's a Ryan Reynolds vehicle, though. That's Ryan Reynolds.
I think Logan is really good.
I thought Logan was good, too. But if you, like,
What about Days of Future Past?
That's when they got it right. After, like, the first... I would say after the first original X-Men movie.
Yeah.
That's when it started to just take a turn.
Well, right. There's two, then there's three, which I don't remember three. I may have not even seen all of three. But people hate three. And
three's
then they
terrible.
Concluded with First Class. First Class is really good.
Which was done well because I think you had a better just storyline and they chose
you had Fassbender as
he's incredible.
Let's talk about how sexy he is in this show.
Oh man.
I mean, Magneto, I might have to say he's the MVP of this season. I mean,
beautiful man. He's supposed to be old too, but he's beautiful.
I walked away like I think he's my favorite character.
Shredded, like said, shredded beyond belief too. And
we begin this series where Charles is supposedly dead.
Yeah,
and
nobody knows that he's alive other than the X-Men.
Neither do we really, right? It's not until like episode 3 or 4.
No, we see him chilling
on another planet.
No, well, we knew because again, in the last episode of the original series, Graduation Day, they get the idea. Oh, the only person that can save Charles Xavier is Lilandra from the Shi'ar Empire,
okay,
who's his girlfriend anyway.
Right, right.
So she just picks him up when he's in his coma and whisks him to space. And that's how it ends.
Okay, so you would have known that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Well, first of all, we haven't talked yet about maybe one of the best themes in cartoon history. And they did it really good this time. They had, who was it? The Newton Brothers did all the music, and they kind of did a version of it, although it's very faithful.
It.
Yeah, but with the Marvel, first of all, they do the Marvel logo, but they show you the history of Marvel cartoons. So you see, like, you know, you see a little bit of the 60s Spider-Man and then the original X-Men. So it's cool. It's like with the movie
Marvel.
Did you notice
the Silver Surfer was in that, too? Because that short-lived Silver Surfer cartoon on UPN 9.
I didn't notice that.
So in the opening of that splash page, if you look in the opening of that splash page, you will see the surfer standing there with a stoic look on his face.
It's awesome.
Very good. It's very good.
They should have put the Muppet Babies in there, though, because Muppet Babies...
Are they canon, though? Are they canon?
They're not canon, but they were Marvel Animation. They're one of the biggest hits Marvel Animation ever had.
Well, I always remember at the end of the show, you would see Spider-Man like crawl down and it would say Marvel Productions.
Do you remember? Yes.
Like, yeah. And
you were like, what is this?
I was like, what? Spider-Man's a Muppet baby?
Yeah.
Is that Nanny? What?
Yeah.
It's like a ton. Blah, 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 bum, 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 bum,
with the drums.
You're hyped already.
Of course.
And other people have said this. What a brilliant opening, because it tells you what you need. Here are the guys. Here are their names. Here's kind of what they do. You got it. You don't need anything else.
And then by episode 3, it switches up because the first Jean Grey is Madeline Pryor. So it's a completely different look.
I love how they fuck with the opening in almost every episode. And then in the second episode, Magneto has his own card, like he's an X-Men, and it's like, oh. Magneto, so at the end of the first episode, and we'll jump all around, but in the first episode, like the big like cliffhanger ending is in Charles Xavier's will, he leaves the X-Men and the school and everything to Eric Magnus, I forget his last name, Magneto. And it's like, oh shit, Magneto is the fucking leader now. And he walks in with gorgeous white locks.
Beautiful hair.
Shredded, like, white hair. And now he's like, I want to be a good guy. And he's fucking saving people and fucking,
well,
Rogue have a situation.
Well, saving is a stretch, but it's just...
I think he really goes for it. I think he's really trying to walk the line up until they push him so far that he's like, fuck it, I'm not giving humans another chance. Fuck, what does he say? Like, don't let me let you down or some shit like that.
Yes.
Well, that was a crazy episode. That's episode 2, where it's basically like a echo of, like, it's like a reflection of January 6th, like in the cartoon. I was like, holy shit.
Oh, it mirrors. And I think what's cool about just, I think, X-Men in general, more than any other property Marvel has, is how political it could be.
Yeah.
How political it is.
Yeah. It's woke as fuck before that was even a word. Like, it was always from get-go woke. Like, it always was about something.
Well, you know, I think the first 2 episodes alone, they're probably the greatest animated episodes of television. Even you might want to say in current day, just maybe even current day, like TV in general, just because of the writing and how good the voice acting is.
Yeah.
You know, where the dialogue, the action, the facial expressions are very, very good, especially for Cyclops, because we're not really dealing with much from, like, that visor takes up a ton of his face. So what you're looking at, you know, I think the Sentinel battle at the end of episode 1.
That's Storm pretty sick.
I think Storm losing her powers, and you quite literally with Storm too. I think people underestimate how powerful of a mutant she could be, where the X-Men have weaponized Storm to the point where, like, she is right. The big gun, right? Yeah. I think second to, in the hierarchy of the X-Men, I think it goes Magneto, Storm, and then Jean Grey. Those are like your big guns. Yeah. Those are your heavy hitters. In that squad, you know.
And I love her haircut in the first half of the season. She's got like a mohawk.
It's the 80s version. That's that 80s look that they go back in the late 80s, you know. And I think it gut me a little bit where she lost her powers and she
does that to save Magneto too.
And she utters, "The breeze is gone."
Yes.
Like, there's going to be a couple of times. Yeah. There's going to be a couple of times where you're going to sit there and they have these quick little hitters that just, like, gut you. And that was the first one. And I was like, damn.
Oh, yeah. And there's more. There's plenty more. Yeah. So I just want to, give some context for the stories. Like, so yeah, Magneto becomes the head of the X-Men, and then he's kind of doing good, but then the UN is like, you know, all right, if you're a really good guy now, turn yourself in for a UN fucking tribunal for the crimes against humanity fucking pulled. So he does. He says, okay, I'll do it. And he goes to the UN, and they're like putting him on trial. And he basically talks about that he grew up in the fucking Holocaust. And he's like, I saw my people fucking killed because they called God by a different name.
So good.
And like, And it's like, is this a fucking cartoon I'm watching? And then they're like, he's like winning them over. He's like winning over. But then people who fucking, like, the anti fucking mutant, like, riffraff, the humans, basically pull a Giant Six and fucking
the normies.
Storm. Yeah, they the storm. Normies. the fucking UN and like break in and are like starting fights and shit. There's one scene that's so like, I can't believe they're saying this, is like, there's Executioner, who is a fucking human who hates fucking...
He's the shaman. All that they were missing was just him in some sort of like loincloth with like face paint.
Yes, exactly. That's who he was. Yeah.
He was the shaman.
And he says, you know what I don't... He says, you know what I hate about you mutants? You're always complaining about how hard you have it. We have it hard too, but we don't complain about it. And it's like, are you fucking my racist uncle at Thanksgiving? What... Where did you get this dialogue from?
Right. It hits so close to home.
It's so crazy. It's so sad and crazy that like it's still so relevant. Like it's even more relevant now in a way.
Even for an animated series, if you look at it, right, it is the complete opposite of being the most aggressively passive comic book adaptation ever made, because they go right into it.
Yeah.
And wherever you stand geopolitically within this current climate in our real world and not an animated world, you can't help but understand or have some sort of thought on the complexities of how that should and could and will bleed over into our media. Like this is pop, like, you know, this is pop culture man children. If we can literally talk about like, the way the political parties are presented on news is just a three-ring circus, and it's just getting worse and worse with every single election year. And the way you look at it now, it's better in the animated series than it is in real life.
Yeah, you know?
And
you know what's interesting is, and I love the movies, but I feel like the movies, you know, they're quicker narrative, so I feel like you can't dig in as much.
Right.
In this series, I feel like they really do a good job making you kind of really think about both sides. Like, there's a part where basically Genosha, which is the mutant country, gets taken into the UN. They're part of the UN. They're accepted as the global community. And then basically, like, they're bombed. A fucking genocide happens. And then Magneto's like, fuck it. Like, humans are bad. I'm not going to try to be good. And you're kind of like, he's right a little bit.
Well, it was that what got him was Toad.
Yes. You know?
And then he says it. I had this child cling to me. And I had to lie and look him in the eye and tell him everything was going to be all right before he was vaporized.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It's like, it's twists and turns this year. You're watching it. It's like, what? Like, it's crazy.
It's under the guise of a children's cartoon, right? But I think Marvel knew that it wasn't going to be a children's cartoon. This was definitely for the adults.
Yeah,
for
it grew with the fan base.
You know,
if you
were
watching the originals,
you're a collector of something, you're in it, right? And like we were saying before, like, you know, X-Men 97 really presents a mature look at how messy humanity is, our ruination, our redemption. You know, dare do we ask, is tolerance an extinction? How can we survive and exist if we allow our enemies to survive and exist?
Yeah. In the very first scene, Robert, what's his name? Roberto?
Sunspot.
Yeah, Sunspot. In the very first episode, in like one of the first scenes, he says, I'm born this way.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's like, I'm born this way. It's wild. I mean, it's wild. But it's super entertaining too. It's like, you know, there seems to be a thread of thought online where like putting a message or thinking about politics or thinking about rights or whatever is something you do when you don't have talent to write good, quote unquote, good stories. Like the cliche is, I don't have a good story or I don't have a good character,
that's
so I'll
bullshit.
Just add diversity.
No, that's bullshit.
That's such stupidity.
That's bullshit
because
even Stan Lee said it. You know, he created the X-Men because of the political climate back in the times when civil rights was was the issue.
Right.
So, you know, that's why the X-Men were created.
That's why
mutants were created. So it's like you can't sit there and say, it's the easy way out and we can just make parallels to Jan 6th and MAGA and whatever else. No, like this, I want the work that I'm into to reflect the world in which I live in.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I want to see the characters that I want to get lost in pushed to their breaking point, like Magneto and Cyclops and Rogue within this series. They were pushed to their breaking points,
right,
because
right.
They were different, because they were born a specific way, because they other humanity normies feared
yeah.
what these individuals can do. Right. I mean, we were talking about Days of Future Past and First Class real quick. Like, you could even go back to the scene where Magneto's at the bar and he realizes that he's in a Nazi bar in Argentina and says, when they start to talk, when he's having the conversation, how effortlessly he goes from speaking Argentinian to German and English, you know, where he talks about, and the coldest line in the world before he kills the two forming the former Nazi soldiers was, well, my mother was killed by a pig farmer and my father was killed by a tailor, because the two guys said, well, what are you doing in Argentina? He asked them. And he said, well, I'm a pig farmer. And the other one said, I'm a tailor. And like, then he was No, I know who you are, because like, and then he turned over and he saw like the numbers written on his forearm.
And they do that in this series too.
So good.
Which they did.
They did. They showed the
did
number.
Did they ever
tattoo.
Do that in the original series?
You know,
because goddamn, that's very evocative for a cartoon.
No,
like,
they never really they never like they skated around the Holocaust. They skated around like genocide in that regard. You know, they talked about, or they showed, you know, flashbacks or remnants of Magneto's, you know, time in a concentration camp. But I don't think they really ever deep dived into right. it. It was in the books. It was in the movies later on.
Right.
Where
and
you can really build off that. And it should be in this even more because of what his thought process is, where he's not a bad guy to begin with, Magneto.
Right. Well,
he's
him
not.
And Xavier kind of begin in the same place.
Yes. And one is more idealistic and a dreamer, and thinks we can have this utopia where humans and mutants can live together and everybody holds hands and we can buy the world a Coke and we can sing Kumbaya. You know, that's Xavier. And even in this series, he still tries to do that. But then you have the more realist.
Yeah.
The
pragmatic.
More pragmatic. You know, yeah. I want to say the one that understands existentialism, that this is all it is, and this is who we are. And yeah, Charles, unfortunately, yes, there are some good ones out there, but it's always going to be an us versus them mentality.
Right.
Even that scene when they were at, where the school gets destroyed and Magneto comes with the asteroid.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there and he's telling the X-Men, I tried his way. You tried his
way. That's such a great moment. Cause and that was the moment where I was like, I'm with you, Magneto.
He's
and then
right.
He goes, who's with me? And Rogue goes with him. And everyone's like, Rogue, what are you doing? She's like, he's right. And then
I
was with him too.
Well, if you notice during that whole speech, until she flies up, she's wearing Gambit's trench coat.
Right. We haven't said that in Genosha, in that crazy scene where everybody's getting killed by Sentinels, Gambit dies. Now, does anyone die for good? No. But it's a matter of how long can you be dead for?
And right. Especially in comic
dead
books.
From like, what, episode 3 or 4 to the rest of the show.
So that he's gone. Like,
right.
And maybe
back,
he doesn't.
But
maybe he isn't. He was one of the most popular X-Men in the original series, but you know, and then he's in there and he's cooking beignets and he has that belly t-shirt
Mon
on and he's just Mon Ami and he's all ripped and like there's that amazing sexual tension between him and Rogue and she's saying, I can't touch you, Remy. And he goes, yeah, it's not about you think I need you to touch me, Cher? It's not that's not love, Cher. That's not intimacy, Cher. Like and they did to each other. And I can understand her frustrations and not being able to have, I guess one of her love languages was probably physical touch. And she probably yearned for it so bad because she never got it.
Well, what do you think of the romance between her and Magneto. I know that exists in the comics, but I was not aware of it.
Yeah.
And I also wasn't aware that Magneto can touch her somehow.
Well, Magneto's just a powerful mofo, so
Yeah.
he
And
was probably able to bend electrons or something. What they
right.
don't explain it. You just
He did.
know that he can caress her face, give her a smoochy
Right.
smooch, whatever. They can go on dates.
They're having like a one-on-one talk in his office, and they're like feeling pretty cozy. And I'm like, huh, this is weird.
Yeah, they call
And then
buddies.
like she slips off her
Glove.
glove, and I'm like, whoa,
Yeah.
sir, what is happening? And then it's like, holy shit. And then they're like, and then fucking you see like fucking Gambit like watching, like fucking like
Well, that
his
was a
the
sin. Well,
card falls all over his hand, like, oh my
that was
God.
more of a of Sinister was messing around with them. Remember when Mr.
Well,
Sinister
right, but
gave
that was a
the
different. That was later in that episode when Sinister.
Yeah.
You know, see, that gets something else which I didn't realize, which is like it's such a soap opera. It's such a soap opera. Like, it's like this one and that one, and you're a clone, and this is my baby, but my baby went away. Like, I couldn't. Like, I was like, holy shit! Like, this is why people like this. Like, it's a soap opera. Like that's the following that shit. And you know, and like, oh, you know, Wolverine loves Jean Grey, but Jean Grey is with fucking Cyclops, and Cyclops is the good guy, and Wolverine's like, it's just like this is soap opera shit.
Right, but Cyclops is torn between Madeline Pryor and Jean Grey because he was under the guise that they were the same woman.
And
So the
Madeline was
woman
the one who had the baby.
had Nathaniel Summers, who would become Cable. So, you know, that guy was just all messed up. You want to talk about going through a midlife crisis? He felt that he wasn't the one that should have been the leader of the X-Men because of the poor decision that he's been making, but also
But at first
to.
he wanted to be, and he felt heartbroken
He did.
when Mag he it went to Magneto,
Right, but if you
because he was
notice
like,
once
I
the
was the fucking heir apparent.
right, but if you notice once the school gets trashed during that battle with Sinister,
Yeah.
there he starts to question the validity of everything that he's ever done, and he was like, I can't do what Charles did. He was a father, he was a teacher, he was a mentor, he was a leader. Those are the things that I am not.
Right. And
It
he
was a
just
big
wants to
imposter
be a
syndrome with
father.
Cy. He just, yeah. And
He just wants the kid. Yeah.
even to the point where, too, I don't know if you picked up on it, but there was this sense where he wanted to be more untethered and he could get away with it. Because if you just take off the Ruby Quartz visor and put on Ruby Quartz sunglasses, Cyclops could lead a very normal existence
Well,
and
isn't
blend
G
in.
who's the one that wants to leave? Is it Gene or
But
him?
at one point, they both want to stay, and then at one point, they both want to leave, and then
Right.
at one point, they're back in the game again.
Right. And then when Charles comes back later and he's like, what the fuck, giving it to Magneto, he says, like, I didn't want you to have to do it. I wanted you to leave.
Well, that's because he wanted him to have his own independence for the first time ever because he never had
Right.
that.
Because they were like kids when
There were
he.
soldiers.
Right.
He had soldiers. If you think about it, Xavier was weird. He was building
Yeah.
child soldiers,
Yeah.
like to
It's
go
funny
and
because
fight the battle.
then there's a new Star Wars show that's kind of finally like dealing with how fucking weird the Jedi are and how they just steal children
I'm glad
and
that they're
fucking
exposing that.
and just and like they steal little kids and fucking make them and say, oh, you can't see your mom and dad anymore and now you're a fucking Jedi. Like it's I like thinking about that.
Yeah, here, you get a robot and a lightsaber. Don't worry about mom and dad. You get 3 squares a day.
Right.
Just learn how to
Yeah,
use the force.
and don't feel sad that you don't see your mom and dad. Sadness is bad.
Yeah, you know.
Let's talk about Morph. Morph is here to just give us cameos and
All of them.
fucking.
Give us all the cameos.
Right.
Hulk, Quicksilver,
Right.
Archangel, Cyclops. Like you name them all. He's doing them.
Juggernaut.
Juggernaut, he's doing them all.
He
He's
just
doing them
turns
all.
into fucking other. Like, it's a way to get every X-Men in there without having them in the story. He just turns into them.
Well, also, too, Morph really set the tone in the first animated series in 92 because he's the one that gets taken out first. Knight of the Sentinel, Morph gets allegedly gets killed.
And that's what, season one?
That's season one, episode one in the
Oh.
first season back. You go back and watch X-Men in 92,
So he
Knight
was
of the
there in the
Sentinel,
beginning.
Knight of the Sentinel part one, Morph is taken out. And it's not even like he gets killed. It's like Like a beam blasts him. He goes flying into a tree.
How does he come back?
Well, Sinister grabs him. They left him for dead. And he starts to implant, like, you know, all this stuff in his brain. And he makes him go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And he starts to come back to toy with the X-Men. Fuck with the X-Men. And then, you know, they save him and they fix him. They, you know, recorrect whatever the mindful hold that Sinister had on Morph. And then in this series, he's incredible. He's funny. He really is the comic levity to it. And I like how they also did when Magneto was asking everybody to say, join me. Are you out? Rogue mentions a few people and points to Morph and say they had the worst of it. And I like that they referenced Morph as a they and how smart that was. And I was like, oh wow, that is a really good way to establish Morph. Like, they gave Morph so many layers that the first series really didn't do.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, so I'm a Cash fan. I didn't know anything about Morph. I was like, I was like, who the fuck is Morph? But he's funny. He's interesting. He does interesting things. Like, there's a point where Wolverine is like really sick and like dying, and he turns into Jean Grey to like be like, I love you. Stay with me.
Yeah, well, she ain't gonna say it, so I have to.
Right.
And they have a really good chemistry together too, where it you know, like, that's your bro, and you love your bro. And you have this special bond, and you know that this will, you know him better than anybody else.
Well, he turns into Jean Grey in, I think, the first episode where they're like, they're in a club.
Yeah.
And he turns into Jean Grey to Wolverine, and he's like, hey, I'm pregnant with the best man, and I'm going to have the best baby in the whole wide world. Just fucking with him.
He's fucking with him. And it's a great dynamic, too. So, like, you see their friendship, and it's like, it's the only time you ever see Wolverine not be so, bub, you know, like, he looks at Morph and he knows, like, you're the only one that can get away with this shit because I love you. Yeah. If it was anybody else, they'd be getting a claw up their ass. But since it's you, you're different. You can do this. And I like the fact that this series didn't do what the first series did and become the Wolverine show. Wolverine's a background player in this.
Yeah,
series.
he's not very well. He's not a big part of it. He's not really good. Like a protagonist.
Good. I don't want that. I am so tired of Wolverine.
And again,
arguably, not even arguably, is the most popular X-Men character. Might be one of the most popular Marvel characters.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy single-handedly was probably the reason why we all went to go see those movies in droves anyway, because you wanted to see the cool factor of Wolverine and Hugh Jackman. But this, there are so many different X-Men that each one of them, like, you look forward to seeing more of. I'm glad we got more Rogue. Well, I'm glad we had more Magneto.
I mean, I like those movies. I like the movie series in general. But we've never had like a proper Jubilee or Gambit in the movies.
Right.
It's done for real.
And I think because you needed such a cataclysmic ending to episode 5, which is Remember It, you know, that's the perfect example that you need a hero to die to realize you need heroes.
Mm-hmm.
The deaths in Genosha solidified the true evil of the villains and the level of the stakes and the level of the importance of the heroes. And I don't think really the first season, I don't think the first iteration of the show really did that. I think, you know, it's more centralized in this because you can get a bit more risque in regards you know, it's not Fox Kids.
Right. You
know, This is straight. We know our bread and butter. It's adults.
Who is it? Is it Jean or Madeline? Madeline becomes the Goblin Queen, and it's
she got wiped out in Genosha.
Right, but it's pretty sexy. I don't think you would have ever been on Fox Kids. Like what?
You weren't getting. I mean, they had the I don't know, because you would see the memes where they would show Rogue's like the
right.
Ron and how. And how, you know, they did that And maybe that could have been like a tip of the cap and a wink, like, huh? See, we get it. But I think with like this, they actually understood cartoons could be sexy without being sexual.
Yeah.
And you can do it in a way that's rather tasteful and tame, but you can realize that, oh no, these characters, they do have sex with each other.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's, you know what I mean? Like, they do.
Yeah. There's an interesting scene when there are two Jean Greys, and, you know, the Jean, you know, before all that happens, and they're kind of like, who's the clone? Who isn't the clone? You know, and they don't know which one's the clone. And, you know, they know Mr. Sinister made the clone and replaced her with a clone, but he doesn't say when. So they don't know how long ago it was, how recently it was. They both have the same memories, but they don't know if their memories are really theirs. And Jean Grey, the one who turns out to be the real Jean Grey, kisses Logan.
Yeah.
Which is like, whoa. And then he says, like, I know it's you and him. You know, you just forgot that for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, because she was, I don't know if it was jealousy, Jean Grey, but
he's the ultimate like gym bro with his heart broken, and he takes it out on the fucking steel. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's Wolverine forever. Like, forever Wolverine. He's forever the underdog.
Well, he'll always be friend zoned by her. Like, right, you know, because her heart will always
be out in the gym.
Right. Her heart will always belong to Cyclops. And she uses him because she doesn't really know how to understand that Cyclops was tricked and fooled by Sinister, thinking that his wife is Jean Grey. Meanwhile, it was,
and then he starts emotionally cheating on her with because he's doing psychic connections with Madeline, and fucking Jean's like, "That's our thing," and he's like, "I didn't mean it, baby.
Baby, come here, link with me right now. Link with me." No, but you know the fucking Cyclops. He was, the guy was riding two horses with one ass, but the horse looked the same. How could you do that? You know, it's tough, but man, the way everything just worked after episode 5 till then, I think like another key moment at the beginning was episode 8 of Tolerance of Extinction part 1, and how the filmmakers balanced all those different storylines.
We haven't said yet. The showrunner of the show is a guy named Bo DeMeo. And mm-hmm. He wrote most of the episodes, and it seems like he really has a strong, I mean, obviously there's Feige above him.
Right.
But it seems to be the one, he mapped this all out.
No, and it's smart because, you know, you look at it as we're starting over. Not that the slate is wiped clean, but we already have 5 seasons of canon and established storylines and characters that we don't really have to go into more character. Like, we know who they are. Now all we have to do is just centralize and focus each of the 10 episodes on a cluster of individuals and make it a rotating group. Like, if you look at it, it's mostly Magneto, Cyclops, and Rogue.
Yeah.
Which worked very well.
Right. And after Rogue, after Gambit dies, Rogue kind of is unhinged. At one point, she's got, who'd she have? Trask? No, she has, who's the other one? Not Trask.
Yeah, it was Trask because he became a sentinel.
Well, it was Trask. Yeah. She lets him go. Like, she kills him, basically.
Is this who we are now? Is this what we do? Shit.
Yeah.
Well, look at what they were doing with Captain America. That really great scene between Rogue and Captain America. Like, wow, I gotta do everything by the book, bro. I love that
she threw his fucking shield away. Yeah, like, you don't need this shit.
Here, you can't do, here's your democracy. Fuck your democracy. And she throws like the shield. So that was cool. I have a crazy question
for you though.
What's up?
This is gonna sound crazy, but I think all possibilities are on the table.
Okay.
Do you think we might see one of these animated characters actually animated in Deadpool and Wolverine? Because now that we've got a multiverse, and now that we've got everything opened up, and we're going to have fucking Taylor Swift in it as maybe Lady Deadpool, or maybe it's his wife as Lady Deadpool, or we might have fucking any version of the Spider-Man. We could have anything at this point. Why not have fucking a cartoon character like Roger Rabbit walk out?
It would be funny because I think the way, you know, Reynolds' brain works is, I think, you know, he understands the source material and understands Marvel better than a lot of individuals that do
he's
all
Marvel
these
Jesus.
Things. He really is, because he's smart. He just understands, like, okay, we can probably get a cheap laugh here. It can make sense here, and then we can be in and out.
There's going to be crazy shit in that movie. There's
I think so. I would like to see that, just because of how hot X-Men 97 is.
Yes.
That it wouldn't be, it would be really funny to have some sort of animation multiverse thing thrown in, because they did it in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Right. Exactly.
And where he's in that, like, I don't know, that League of Spider-Men. And yeah, they're all there, and you have like the Tyrannosaurus Rex Spider-Man, and then you have like the classic 60s Spider-Man. So you're seeing all these other Spider-Men.
But then they make reference to the Tom Holland one in the second one of those. So everything's everything now. Like, everything's connected now with the multiverse. I've heard people say that the way that 97 ends, with them going back in time to Egypt, ancient Egypt, and meeting Apocalypse, that they're like, oh, in that storyline, Kang is there. So if Kang's there, this also leads into the fucking multiverse that everything else is doing.
It's a good way to tie it all in, because if the multiverse is your thing, and I understand, you know, the situation with Jonathan Majors really put a roadblock.
What an asshole.
Into what was going on.
Right.
But if you're setting up that your big baddie in this is Kang, what better way to do it and to reestablish what you're supposed to see, or what we're going to see with Kang, than doing it in an animation form where he could take the shape of anybody and any period in time in history.
Right.
So I also would like to see them do those what ifs and one offs where, like, Apocalypse is an X-Men.
Yeah.
And he was. There's a comic book that he is.
Yeah.
I would like to see where they go with this as well, because they it's them who find him first.
Right. I mean, it sets up way more stories. At the end, who is it? Jean and Cyclops go to the future. But then I think everyone else goes to ancient Egypt.
Well, not everybody. We don't know where everybody else.
Oh, right. They're missing people. Right. At the end, you see Forge is in front of like a fucking board of all their faces. And it says like missing, presumed dead. So you don't know where a lot of them are because of the way it ended.
And I think we're getting Colossus in season two.
Okay. Well, I heard also, speaking of Deadpool, that they said that they there was some decree that they couldn't use Deadpool in season one, but they're saying they're open to using him in season two. And by God, if they do it, they better get Ryan Reynolds to voice it.
Oh, they have to.
He's the only one.
But I would like to see them. I would like to see them use Colossus in a major way, because I think people forget how big of a badass and a leader Colossus is as well.
Right. Morph turns into him in one scene.
Well, Morph turns into a lot of people, but like, who's not mentioned in
speaking of Deadpool, he's great in Deadpool, right? Colossus, maybe his biggest shining moment outside, like in live action, is probably Deadpool.
Yeah, I think so. But like, they
there's a version of him, I think, in X3 or whatever.
They only scratched the surface of how good he was in the original cartoon as well. So this is according to Screen Rant. I seen this on their Instagram page, and I took it because I wanted to mention this. This is what Screen Rant says. Many of these could appear in season two. All of the major X-Men characters missing from X-Men 97. Deadpool had a cameo appearance in X-Men animated series. Avalanche is essential member of the Brotherhood of Mutants. Pyro would flourish in X-Men 97. Lady Deathstrike is teased in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. Juggernaut was a memorable X-Men, the animated series villain. Ilana Rasputin has presumably already transformed into magic.
Anya Taylor-Joy plays in what's that fucking movie that no one saw? New Mutants.
Yeah.
Was that her character?
I think so.
I'm a big Anya fan.
huge, massive. Then you have Havoc wasn't featured in it, who is Cyclops' brother. So I would like to see the relationship with Cyclops and Havoc, because they never really explored that. Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are teased. Sabretooth was a terrifying presence in X-Men, the animated series. Mystique's absence in this is particularly strange.
Yeah, she. But you again, don't even see her at all.
Right, but we don't know.
Right, because she could be anybody.
Because she could be anybody. And then Colossus was invited to join X-Men in the original series. So I would like to see Colossus be the dude in this now, because they're going to need a leader, since Magneto, Charles, and what's his face? Cyclops, they're missing.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think Marvel's plans are? Because this show is great, and they're probably going to keep making more of the show, more seasons. But of course, their eyes are always on the movies. And it's smart that they had, they're bringing Hugh Jackman back, but you're creating a multiverse, right? So now you might be able to have, say, here's your Hugh Jackman, but here's someone else that's going to be Wolverine from now on or whatever. How are they going to do it? How are they going to get all of these, like a tremendous amount of characters, somehow rehabilitate them from the Fox world or remake them from the Fox world, or maybe not, I don't know, and put them into movies? Because that's their eventual goal, right? And that's what their Deadpool and Wolverine is going to be, in some way a bridge to make that happen, to get them into the Marvel Cinematic Universe world. How are they going to do it?
I think this is a really good first start to reestablish, hey, mutants are a thing. I think first they do it with, I think the questions are going to be answered in Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
And then I think we'll get a Fantastic Four movie first, which will probably maybe get some sort of, because where was, you know, the Fantastic Family, Marvel's first family?
Right. They have not been mentioned.
How do you explain all of this the Avengers did? How do you explain all that?
Isn't Mr. Fantastic in?
Yeah, but that's in one of those.
I didn't see that.
That was Multiverse of Madness. That was like in a different universe. But I think all of that will get explained somehow. Now, will it be, hopefully, will it mind blow us and our brains ooze out of the side of our ears? Yeah, I would love to believe that. But I think this is a good entry point into, okay, mutants exist in the Marvel Universe. They're going to really exist with Deadpool. And let's see what happens.
Yeah. All right. So you haven't been on the show in a while, so I want to ask you, what are you currently obsessed with?
I am currently obsessed with all things Michael Jackson's discography.
Okay.
I recently watched a documentary on the 40th anniversary of Thriller.
Yes.
And I'm really big into the production aspect and how Michael Jackson's brain really worked in regards to crafting arguably the greatest album of all time.
Okay.
And how that album changed the perception of pop music moving forward in regards to how it's viewed now.
How did it change the perception of pop music?
Well, think about it this way. What was pop music prior to 1983, right? You'd have a couple of one-hit wonders. You'd maybe MTV was in its infancy, but most of the time they were like these quick, short bursts of radio hits. They weren't like, it wasn't a rogues gallery of what you've seen after Thriller. There was music before Thriller where the pop acts of the 60s, 70s were like, you know, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows every place, you know, things like that. Then they really started to change, and guys like Quincy Jones were starting to work on these masterpieces where, you know, there's a cohesency. They're not just making one song. They're making an entire album worth of hits. Mm-hmm. And that's where it changes after that, because if you look at it, MTV was playing rock music. They weren't playing. Right,
it was no black people.
There was Michael Jackson's the first black artist to be played on MTV, and they did it begrudgingly because I guess Michael Jackson was signed to Epic or RCA at the time. I think it was Epic. And the president of Epic really, you know, put the screws to MTV to be like, yo, what are you doing? And then they begrudgingly did it. Billie Jean was the first music video to pop. And then it took off like a puddle of gasoline. Michael Jackson's instantly goes from just an R&B performer, one of the most popular R&B artists of the time, to a pop culture icon.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on this incredible run with The Girl Is Mine, Billie Jean, PYT. And
great videos too, not just great songs. Like Thriller, I think, like, really opened up videos. You see some of those early videos and they look so bad.
Well, even Thriller's, if you look like at Billie Jean.
It's a movie.
Well, look at Billie Jean. Billie Jean.
He's just on a dance floor that lights up.
And if you look, he's shot from the waist up.
Yeah.
And he's moving. His legs are moving. His hips are moving. You see none of that.
Right.
Everything changes after Thriller. Right. He originally wanted to make that the next single. The label's like, no, we're done. You know, the album's been out a year, bud. 5 million copies. We're good. Jane Fonda's going to hit you with the plaque. We'll present it. We'll make it a big thing. Then you can plant. You can announce that we're doing a new album. Michael Jackson says, no. I got this song on Thriller. There's a reason why I made all these records. All of these records can go and be hit singles. And they damn near were. So they're like, well, what do you want to do with Thriller? Michael Jackson, obsessed at the time with the John Landis film, An American Werewolf in London, right? Because of the Rick Baker effects, where the character transforms into a werewolf. He's like, I want to do that for Thriller. Now, at the time, a big music video budget in 1984 was roughly around $50,000. That was the max record companies were going to spend. He calls John Landis. John Landis calls Rick Baker. They want to make it the most cinematic thing in the world because they want to incorporate more dancing. They want to show more dancing instead of just Michael Jackson walking on concrete lights. They say, well, the budget's going to be 1.2. The record label's like, we're not paying 1.2.
Right.
Michael Jackson's like, I'll pay for it out of pocket. John Landis goes, nah, bruh, we ain't doing that. Nah, bruh, what we're going to do is I'm going to call MTV and I'm going to tell them we're going to make the making of Thriller. We're going to give you this documentary. You can run all the advertising spots with it because at this point now, Michael Jackson's the guy. Yeah. He is the dude. MTV is like 1.2. You got it.
For an hour of programming. You'll play the video for 15 minutes and then you have a 45 minute documentary. There's your hour.
And they're like, all right, cool. Michael Jackson. Now they get to work. Rick Baker is getting to work and they do two versions of the makeup first. Right. The first version is a really scarier werewolf. And John Landis goes like, no, Mike, you can't be on all fours and transform because you're going to need to dance.
Right.
And they're like, Michael's like, all right, I don't need to dance as a werewolf. I want to look menacing. And they're like, all right. But John Landis is like, but let's make it a little bit more cat-ish rather than scary werewolf, but still be scary. He's like, bet. Now we got to figure out the dancing part. And Rick Baker comes up with the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And you get what you get in Thriller. Right. And that song just takes that album to an even bigger level. After they already sold 5 million copies, do you know in the 80s how much that really is? Like, yeah, that's 5 million copies, but that's a lot of people listening. It's not like 5 million streams.
Right.
Streams are easy, but physical copies, that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
This album goes on to go diamond, dude. Diamond. That's over 10 million copies. I think the thing's now at like 100 million records sold. Like, it's... Huh. It's insane, but that song and that music video changed the course of how that album was pushed even further. And then I got into how many units of the original cassette? Because I had the VHS of the making of Thriller.
Yeah, of course.
That thing sold over 6 million.
That's crazy.
And I think MTV got a piece of that.
Do you know that I just read this yesterday. They offered Vincent Price... They said, you could either have back end or we could give you like 20,000. And he's like, I'll take the 20,000.
Yeah.
Which he could have made so much money.
But old school Hollywood, they didn't care. Like, they would just...
It was like, just give me the money now.
Just give me the cash. Cough up the cash. So that's been one of the things that I've been obsessed with. But besides also the matching harmonies and like the staccatos and the keys with certain things and how Thriller was actually made, it was... It was inspired by a disco record called Starlight. So
yes,
they
I've
had
heard
like
that. Yeah.
They had like the, you know, the SP-1200 beat machine and how they're making like the kick and the bass and all of this stuff and how they're like, you know, changing it up just like a millisecond to give it more of like a shake.
Right.
And then like what the Moog synthesizers were doing and all of that stuff. And then I was literally listening to hours of interviews of and people just talking about how Eddie Van Halen changed the structure of the guitar solo in Beat It. And Mark Ronson probably says it the best. You know, like there have been tons of guitarists and there have been tons of guitars on, you know, programmed drums, but you are never going to get that type of sound from anybody else other than Eddie Van Halen and the producers of Beat It. So if you can go back, listen to Beat It and listen to like just from a tonal aspect of how different it is.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's an incredible song to listen to in that regard. That's one of the things that I've been obsessed with.
Emilio, thank you so much for being here. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad we were able to talk about X-Men. What do you have anything to plug? What's going on with you?
I don't know. I'm doing a lot. If you want to watch me do yoga or some sort of adventure with a professional wrestler where we talk about like mindfulness and how to clear the headspace, you can go to my YouTube channel, The Emilio Sparks, T-H-E-E-E, Emilio Sparks. It's whatever. It's you just Google Emilio Sparks yoga. It comes up. My podcast, Wrassle Rap. I'm doing that still. That's a thing. So you can go download that. WRASSLERAP. And I'm producing, making reels, making Instagram videos and all the other stuff that's needed to pay my bills. So
we end every episode by saying
go bye-bye.